The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Welcome to the post-election episode of the Wheeling and Dealing podcast with your host, Neil Carter.
And Valissa Thompson. What an exciting, disruptive time that we are living in right now. So much has been going on today. So much.
I felt like playing both versions of Roller Coaster of Love as our intro, because my goodness, it's literally been a roller coaster of love and so many other emotions.
Oh my God. I think we're all glad to not hear the word vote or election, at least for the next 2 years.
Well, for you, yes, but we have municipal elections next year, so.
Yes. But yeah, I think I can handle that.
I think. So, I mean, let's get right into it. What did the 45 administration do this week? Well, they dropped the ball and Dems took the House. The Democrats won 230 races total, taking the majority of the House of Representatives. Many of the seats were in areas that that Hillary Clinton lost significantly or marginally in 2016. A few others were seats that the National Republican Campaign Committee were trying to hold on to. And these incumbents, and in some cases, these Republican challengers in open seats, capitulated. They campaigned on 45's failed policies of the first year and a half of his administration. And yeah, I've never seen, there were obviously a lot of surprises, and we're going to go through those in a second, but my goodness, Valissa, it was shocking. Some of these results in some of these areas of the country, I wasn't shocked that we won those seats. Or when I say we, I mean the Democratic Party, and that does not mean I am speaking for them by any means, because obviously we are not a vessel for the Democratic Party by any means.
Right.
But I was shocked to see that there were so many seats that were won by the Democrats and were flipped. So kudos goes out to the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee for and Chairman Lujan for doing a tremendous job of outreach all across the country. That notwithstanding, there were seats that they lost. They didn't really want to focus on those too much in their press releases. But, 230 is 230. I would have loved for a situation where Trump lost even more seats, especially in districts where there were entrenched Republicans that had, millions upon millions of dollars backing them up. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get those. But, I mean, let's just run through some of those districts. I mean, obviously, the Democrats flipped 260 seats total tonight, and 304 since 45 was elected. They picked up. I'm just trying to get my notes together here. We elected the first Native woman to Congress in New Mexico, or two, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. In Deb Haaland and Charisse Davids. Deb Haaland in New Mexico 1 and Charisse Davids in Kansas 11. Both candidates ran tremendous campaigns. I can attest to that because I've been following Charisse Davids' campaign ever since she announced her candidacy when she was in the primary. And she ran a tremendous campaign from the primary to the general. And she was under the radar for most of the election. And that wasn't necessarily a shock win to me, But I'm glad it happened. I'm glad there is actual Native representative in Congress for the first time in the history of the U.S. Congress. It took too long for that to happen, so I'm very glad for that.
Yeah, I did not watch the results. You know, I learned from 2016 just to watch the update and see how much everything is on fire.
Right.
So it was really nice to see the Dems win the House, and from what the research I found, that the results create a divided Capitol Hill next year, and it means that 45's plans for new tax cuts, tougher immigration legislation, and changes to the ACA or Obamacare will be blocked. So it's a kind of big sigh of relief for some of those things with the Dems getting the House. And I hope that they really unite together to really protect those policies and protect the most vulnerable and the most marginalized in our country, and really get their heads in the games, because 2020 is around the corner and you cannot get too comfortable. So I definitely want us to celebrate these wins, but I also want us to get, you know, a more stronger backbone to keep the seats that we got and to gain more in the next 2 years. So I don't know, like, it was just, you know, this past week has been very stressful with.
Yes. It's been a lot.
It's been a lot. You know, either you're doing the work like you are, Neil, or you're just watching and just praying that people would do the right thing and vote for the better for everybody and not just for their own selfish reasons or self-interest that will not benefit anyone. Right. So, you know, we didn't, you know, get the results we wanted in the Senate, but we did get the House, and to me, that is a heavy sigh of relief.
Yeah, I mean, to see so many, not just the Democrats winning the House, obviously there were significant losses in the Senate. Two senators, Senator Heitkamp in North Dakota and Senator McCaskill in Missouri, both failed their reelection attempts and lost to Republicans. And we didn't pick up any Senate seats. And the Democrats picked up no Senate seats.
Right.
It's really something that, in obvious addition to all of the gains that the Democrats may have made in the House and the significant losses in the Senate, there were amendments that were passed up and down the ballot across the country that significantly are going to change the landscape going forward into future cycles, and for the betterment, in my opinion, in some cases, for people in the United States. Mm-hmm. Amendment 4, which gave returning citizens the right to vote in Florida, passed. Same-day registration passed in Michigan and Maryland, which allows for, on Election Day, you can actually register to vote and vote the same day. Only a few states have that, and the fact that Maryland and Michigan were able to put that on the ballot this year and get it passed successfully with everything else that was on the ballot is a tremendous feat, and those two states are going to prosper as a result. Obviously, there were some unfortunate bills that passed. Chicago did pass their straw ban, which is unfortunate. I don't know how far-reaching that's going to affect the disability community in Chicago. Obviously, we have friends in the disability community in Chicago and throughout Illinois, and it's not looking positive. Maybe there's going to be initiative to repeal that in the upcoming Chicago mayoral elections that are coming up in 2019. So maybe there's a chance to repeal it. We'll see.
Let's hope so.
Yes, let's hope so. And then another big get is for some reason, slavery was still in the Colorado Constitution. Don't know why, but it was finally taken out of the Colorado Constitution.
Oh my God.
So kudos to the Colorado voters that voted to repeal it and take it out. Yes. I don't know why it was in the Colorado Constitution in 2018.
It's like, thank you, Colorado, for finally catching up after 100 and some years. Thanks for that. Appreciate it.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, Alyssa, I'm curious, with these exit polls that came out across the country, we saw in a few marquee races in Georgia, the Georgia gubernatorial race, the Florida gubernatorial race, and the Texas gubernatorial race. We saw the exit polls in both, in, you know, all three of those jurisdictions with their major marquee races. Obviously, there are marquee races all across the country, but those were marquee for a multitude of reasons. There would there would have been a lot of firsts, especially in Georgia and Florida, respectively, in the two gubernatorial races, if Andrew Gillum and Stacey Abrams were duly elected. And with those exit polls, we saw some numbers that were not surprising to folks of color, certainly not black women. So I'm curious. I'm curious what your thoughts are as far as those exit polls are concerned, because obviously being a black woman, obviously recognizing that black women are the quote unquote black, the backbone of progressive policies and have been ever since the, you know, black women were given the right to vote. Not the same time as Susan B. Anthony and the suffrage movement wants to tell you that black women got the right to vote, because it didn't happen when Susan B. Anthony was fighting in the suffrage movement. That didn't happen. So all those white women that were putting stickers on her gravestone every year, they take videos of it and they vote, you know, I don't need to go into detail. I don't need to waste my breath.
I know. Oh my goodness. Well, black women, we do what we always do. We try to save you all from your own transgressions. And we did it again, according to the CNN exit poll. 92% of black women voted for their and everybody else's best interests, i.e. they voted Democrat, compared to, let's see, 7% who voted Republican and 1% gave no answer. Do know that some of these numbers do fluctuate, so different polls may have different percentages. And white women, white women. So we can't really call y'all the 53% anymore, but we can call you the 49%, because you guys you guys were tied. 49% of white women voted Democrat, and also 49% of them voted Republican, and 2% gave no answer. White women, I'm glad to see the number go down, but you guys still need to do better. I don't get how white women can still vote so strongly for the GOP when they're trying to take all of our rights as women, as families, as, you know, I don't get that. So white women, you guys got to step it up. You guys got to talk to each other. You guys got to hold each other accountable, you know, gather your people, because some of your friends and family, coworkers, are still not voting in the way that they need to. And I don't get how you guys can even support the GOP in this way, in such a strong number. It's not surprising at all. But I just, you know, as much as white women talk about wanting to come together for sisterhood and women need to stick together, you guys don't do that at all. Y'all don't think about sisterhood. You guys don't stick together for yourselves or for anybody else. And I'm going to have to call out black men too, because y'all numbers weren't looking so well either at 88% versus 12%. Black men, y'all got to do better too. You know, like, you know, I'm, you know, we're going to have a tough conversations over Thanksgiving and Christmas with some of y'all, because this whole being over 10% for Trump and for the GOP, I mean, you know, it just is not okay, you know. But black men and white women do not vote for their own best interests, which is a huge problem. And as a black woman, I know many of us are tired of trying to keep the boat afloat while you all are just poking holes in it, you know, making it sink. So, you know, black women, you know, we do what we do best, and that is we come out, we vote, you know, we organize, you know, we run for office, you know, we support our candidates, we support other people's candidates that align with our values, we're going to show up and show out each time, you know. And I do want to reiterate how progressive spaces need to value Black women more, need to support Black women more, because we do what's needed every time. And I hope that these numbers make progressive spaces pay more attention, put more money and support behind Black women and femmes running for office, and to not wait to the last minute to support somebody when you see that their kitchen stinks, which I know has been the issue when it comes to many Black candidates this particular season. So thank you to all the Black women who, you know, just thank, you know, for me, thank the Black women that, you know, do what needs to be done. And I need everybody else to get on our level.
And I'll just add that certainly Black men need to step up. I was shocked at some of the splits, not just in the marquee races, but just in turnout in general for Black men. I think there was, I've had a few conversations in some of the Black men circles that I'm a part of, and I've noticed that ever since, frankly, Kanye West and Jim Brown were sitting in across from 45 in that infamous, I wouldn't even call it a press conference, I would just call it a circus, because that's pretty much what it was. during that conversation, there were a significant amount of Black men who saw themselves in Kanye West and Jim Brown, even though Jim Brown pretty much didn't say anything that entire circus of a conversation. They saw themselves represented, and they saw themselves a part of the conversation. And I think it's unfortunate because they think in Kanye West and Jim Brown, they see themselves, when in fact, Kanye West in particular was there for himself. And then, and specifically, he was there to idolize 45. He had no intention of talking about policy or any other issues. And that's proof positive. We've seen Black male pastors. There was the infamous meeting that happened a few months ago with Black male pastors and a few Black women pastors who had a meeting with President 45. And in that same meeting, they were there to praise 45. They were not interested in talking about policy whatsoever. There was not a conversation about policy. So we do certainly need to have a conversation. There are a significant number of, and Valissa, I'm sure you've seen it today, and you know, especially last night, there were a significant number of white women-led organizations that said, quote unquote, we flipped the house. and, you know, we did this. And, you know, we showed up, and they tweeted pictures of their, you know, their pink resist hats and, you know, their pink fists and all this other garbage. And first of all, to use any of those images is ahistorical as fuck, first of all. Second of all, many of these white woman-led organizations, one of whom in particular, took it upon themselves to specifically highlight the Black women candidates that won, the Black women and women of color candidates that won and flipped seats across the country. And in some of these cases, this national organization that is a white woman-led organization goes out of their way to support the white women candidate, went out of their way, especially this election cycle, went out of their way to support white women candidates over Black women or women of color candidates in races across the country. And then when those Black candidates and then when those Black candidates or women of color candidates won those primaries, they had no choice but to endorse them. And then in some cases, when they didn't endorse the minority candidate or the marginalized candidate, that national organization, as a result, because they endorsed the white woman candidate, ended up changing the entire landscape of that particular primary, so much so that the National Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee would be more inclined to support the white woman candidate going forward in the general than they would the marginalized candidate, the marginalized woman. So take that into consideration when you're getting these consistent emails from a lot of these organizations talking about victory, and when they're talking about send us $5 for all of these women. And you know, you see these, you know, especially during this cycle, there were all these share graphics of all of these women candidates, many of whom were white, by this particular organization. And it was literally like a guess who situation where you were trying to find the minority women in these share graphics. And women of color, marginalized women, should not be playing guess who when it comes to representative government. Mm-hmm. So it's really unfortunate that this national organization kind of took the thunder, tried to take the thunder out of black women's sails by saying that they did all of this work and they won and they flipped when they did very little. Anyway, speaking of women, women did a tremendous job in the midterm elections yesterday. There were significant victories across the country, and I believe if I'm not mistaken, there are 100 women going to Congress, mm-hmm. Which is unprecedented. This is the first time this has ever happened in the history of the United States. So, the Democrats sent two Muslim women to Congress, one in Michigan and the other in Minnesota. The first black woman was elected, Ayanna Pressley, in Massachusetts 7. For the first time in the history of Massachusetts as a state, they sent a black woman to their congressional delegation. The two Muslim women, Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar. Ilhan Omar is really exciting because she actually won the new attorney general's seat. So that is exciting as well. As we talked about before, the first Native women were elected in Sharice Davids and Deb Haaland, as we talked about earlier. I mean, there's so much going on in for women positively as a result of the midterm elections.
I think that, you know, it's so important for women who have the values, the common sense, and the morals to protect our rights to be in office. It's very important for women of color and women of different faiths, different disabilities, you know, sexual orientations and identities to be in office, because we have to get rid of the standard of white men, white cis men, you know, in office. So it's really powerful to see 100 women, you know, taking control, and it's going to be amazing to see the much needed damage they do to hopefully get Congress where it needs to be. I think it's also very motivating for women who have an interest in politics to know that, you know, it's not impossible when you have such diversity of women and femmes in office as well. And I think we also need to recognize that we are, you know, still celebrating so many firsts in this country.
Yes.
You know, and just from, you know, the list that you gave, and plus so many more of the different firsts, it's really astounding how much we still have to go to get that much needed inclusion and intersectionality, you know, in our politics, from the federal level all the way down to the local. So, you know, I think that this has truly been the year of the woman running for office, making her voice heard, roaring, making sure that, you know, just making sure that we have the representation that we need to protect our rights, because men are not going to do it. So I just really am thankful to see so many women win these seats. And it gets me excited to see what they do.
Same here. I am looking forward to them being sworn in, and, you know, especially, you know, women like Alexandria Ortiz Jones, who is, the youngest person elected to Congress. She's exciting all the way around. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of trail she blazes as an incoming freshman. But it's just going to be an exciting time. You know, as we transition into All Politics is Local, we were on the precipice of electing three black governors in Maryland and Georgia and Florida. And they were all exciting candidates. You know, Ben Jealous was an exciting candidate in Maryland. Andrew Gillum was an exciting candidate in Florida. Stacey Abrams was an exciting candidate in Georgia. And we, I think in those respective states, and I have, you know, friends on the ground in all those races, and, you know, I was texting and calling them, you know, all throughout the day today, as results from last night were pouring in. And we sat on a historical moment as a country to see three, again, more firsts, as you just talked about. It would have been the first black governor of Maryland, the first black governor of Florida, the first black governor of Georgia. They would have been historic, and they would have been monumental, but it wasn't just about them being black that was historic. It was the policies that they stood on, that, that, you know, that they stood for, and their platforms were just very forward-thinking for the respective states that they were running in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously, Andrew Gillum's campaign conceded, I think, a little prematurely last night, in my view. The Jealous campaign, actually, they didn't concede early, but all the news outlets, especially the local ones, had reported the race done and Larry Hogan winning, the Republican winning re-election without even any ballots being counted. So they had already called it without anything being counted. That was kind of shocking to me that they kind of jumped the gun a little bit. And the first one to do it was the Fox News affiliate. So, yeah, that was a little shocking. But obviously with, you know, Stacey Abrams, she was facing, in my view, and I'm sure, Valis, in your view as well, she was facing an uphill battle running against the sitting Secretary of State in Brian Kemp, who controlled the voting apparatus all across the state of Georgia. So already she was not just running against white supremacy to an extent, but she was also running against the person who controlled the voting apparatuses. It was actually interesting that when Brian Kemp went to vote, that he actually ran into a voting error. And his voter card was rendered, his initial voter card was actually rendered invalid. So I thought that was a little, I thought that was karma.
Yes.
And, you know, there was so much energy and excitement around the possibility of Stacey winning. And while at, you know, as of this recording, they're still counting absentee ballots. And Stacey's campaign as of this recording hasn't conceded, to Brian Kemp. Brian Kemp, as of this recording, has claimed victory. And obviously we're obviously rooting for Stacey.
Yes.
And, you know, hope that folks, if they have the funds to donate to her campaign, still have the opportunity to do so. In Andrew Gillum's case, I mean, obviously with him conceding so early, the idea was circulating, why did you concede so early with so many votes still out there, with so many counties still yet to be recorded? And his thought process must have been, well, the writing is on the wall.
Right.
And I don't know where he or where his campaign or his consultants or his advisors thought it was smart to concede so early. If my firm was consulting on his campaign, we unfortunately weren't. But
that was the first mistake.
Well, we certainly pitched it. We certainly pitched a Gillum campaign. I can admit that. We don't talk, you know, we obviously have NDAs, so I can't talk about who our clients are on, you know, in public, but we certainly did, you know, now I can say that we certainly did pitch them and it didn't go our way, but that notwithstanding, we did have friends that were consulting on his campaign, and we obviously wanted a positive result for Andrew's campaign. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to see the campaign kind of, I don't want to say fumble the ball at the goal line, because I think that's, but I mean, that's what a lot of pundits were saying happened.
Right.
I don't think that happened with Andrew Gillum's campaign. I think he ran a very, very under the radar campaign in the primary. No one expected him to win the primary, and he did. And it was a shock victory for a lot of folks. Wasn't for me. I've known Andrew personally for years. So I knew as a person, I knew the kind of fighter that he was. So I knew that what he was capable of. Same thing with Stacey. I knew that I've known Stacey for years, and I knew her when she was, you know, before she became minority leader, but when she was in the Georgia legislature, same thing. Like, I've known Ben before he was the president of the NAACP. So to see people that I know on a personal level kind of not get the opportunity that they sought, the office that they sought and they worked so hard for 9 months is heartbreaking. I know that each of them would have been tremendous governors for their respective states. And I know, for you, Alyssa, in Georgia, you would have probably loved to be represented by any one of them.
Yes, yes. Definitely would have loved to have any of them for South Carolina, because we sadly got Henry McMaster for our governor. So, yeah, not a good day for South Carolina at all. But I do want to say, with the whole issue of conceding for particularly Stacey Abrams, we do want to say that a spokesperson for the Georgia Secretary of State office said that the election results are not official until each county certifies its own results, send those totals to the Secretary of State's office, and the Secretary of State's office certifies them by 5 o'clock or before Tuesday, November 13th. So there's plenty of time, for at least for Georgia, the votes to be counted and for us to really see, what's going on between Kemp and Abrams. And, like you said, Stacey needs our support, I feel like, now more than ever, as everybody waits and kind of holds their breath in a way to see what is going on in Georgia. So, just to see all of these races for governors just to be so tight and kind of, it's always seeing some of the drama, here and there. To me, this really shows how, I don't know how dynamic this political year has been and just how hard both of these candidates have worked, all of the candidates have worked, to get so close and to have in some ways uncertainty as to who really got the numbers at this point. And, it shows that, again, we have to support our Black candidates and it's so important to do that. So, and, particularly for Stacey Abrams, it's just been so exciting to see her campaign, particularly in a state like Georgia, and to see her be so close. It's such an exciting time to be in the South and just seeing, Black folks, shaking the table by running.
And, I think because we're standing on such a historic time, we're in a historic time and seeing the 45's administration kind of being bucked by so many folks at the local level, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that, 45 embraced Brian Kemp. Mm-hmm. Brian Kemp literally was trying to run exactly, he said on the record that he was trying to turn Georgia into what Trump would have wanted. As Secretary of State, he was up by 114,000 votes last night, and he canceled 700 during his tenure as Secretary of State. He canceled 750,000 voters, canceled them from the records. And from the voter rolls, 750,000 people were canceled. So when you talk about absentee ballots still being counted, when you talk about like voter suppression, this is and we're talking about unprecedented history making Black gubernatorial candidates. It's also on the voter suppression in Georgia and Florida specifically is also unprecedented. Specifically in Georgia, I've never seen someone who was a Secretary of State so willfully obtuse to go so far as to cancel during an election cycle where they're running for governor, wipe out hundreds of thousands of people, voters, active voters from the voter rolls during an election cycle where they're running for governor. That's never happened before.
Right.
And the fact that it was okay and it happened and there were folks certainly – the New Georgia Project and other organizations were certainly on the ground and have been on the ground for years doing the work on the ground to fight Brian Kemp and to fight his decision to cancel those people. Like the fact that these organizations were on the ground doing the work and in spite of all their work, he still was able to cancel all of them. Those thousands of people, the right to vote is earth shattering.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes to show you that white supremacy will go to any means to subvert the lifting up of marginalized people, no matter if they have an interest in voting, if they are running for office, they will do. White supremacy has so many ways in which to subvert marginalized people, and these three gubernatorial elections are just more examples of that.
Really is.
So obviously, you know, we did have a few upsets. One in South Carolina, in your home state of South Carolina.
Yeah. Yes. Sadly, not in my district.
Unfortunately, no.
But Democratic Joe Cunningham scored a major upset for the race for U.S. House District 1, becoming the first Democrat to hold the seat in nearly four decades. He defeated Republican Katie Arrington 51-49. Like 40 years, you know. So it's that is a major shakeup for our state. So yes, that's, you know, that is really big. So Jim Clyburn is not going to be alone, you know, as the only Democrat now, and now there's two on the House side. Also, we in South Carolina, we was able to flip a state Senate seat and flip two Supreme Court seats. So I don't know. Things, South Carolina, you know, slow but steady. If it's slow, very slow. But steady, you know, progress in the state. Sadly, the governor did not change. We do have Henry McMaster, who took over when Nikki Haley went to be the U.S. ambassador for the UN. So we did not get that, but, you know, some change is better than none.
Agreed. So let's talk about this. We want to talk about the circus. So obviously, you know, the day after recording, I'm sorry, the day of this recording is after the day after election night. So I don't know when folks are going to actually hear that. You may hear this days after the Super Tuesday, but the day of this recording, 45 held a press conference. If you even want to call it a press conference, because I don't think it was a press conference, and I'm sure, Melissa, you don't think it was either.
More like a shit show, but yes.
where he proceeded to rant about everything but the fact that his administration was dealt a significant blow by losing the, you know, his party, the Republican Party, lost the majority in the House. And rather than talking about that, at one point, I think he listed a number of House Republicans that lost their seats, and you know, their seats were flipped to Democrats, and he listed them and said they didn't embrace me, so that's why they lost. Now, in normal cases, the majority party or the party that controls any number of parts of the government would keep those names close. They wouldn't release them in a press release. They wouldn't talk about them in public. They may talk about them in drinks with their friends, that kind of thing. They're not going to list those names in public. But we're not dealing with your typical politician. So for him to literally list, I think at one point when he mentioned Mia Love, he said, you know, Mia Love gave me no love. And like Mia Love was a big win when she won because she was the first black woman Republican ever elected to Congress.
Right.
In Utah, no less.
Of all places.
And you would think that as soon as, because to keep this in perspective for our listeners, these Republicans that lost their reelection campaigns are in office until January. So you would think, because they're in office until January, you would think that 45 wouldn't go out of his way to throw them under their bus prior to, because they still have voting sessions. The December recess hasn't even happened yet. So why would you throw people, you know, Republican legislators in Congress who vote with 45's policies consistently. These aren't just, you know, these aren't on the fence folks. These aren't the folks who retired. We're talking about sitting members of the of Congress, not the ones who retired and tucked their tail and ran, but we're talking about the ones who stayed there and voted with his policies and lost because they were in terrible campaigns. But you know, 45 is counting in on the fact that, you know, it was all him. And I don't understand how someone who, I mean, I obviously wouldn't understand. And no one in political consulting, the campaign world, policy world, has a grasp on this. Like, no one does. And this particular press conference was so beyond the pale, but so normal for the 45. It was normal for the 45 administration, but beyond the pale in a midterm, in a post midterm press conference, it was beyond the pale because this doesn't happen. You don't kick your supporters when they're down. And this is exactly what he did. But these are the same folks who, when he kicks them when they're down, don't care and support him anyway. Mm-hmm. They get kicked, punched, whatever. They don't care. They support him anyway. So,
man. And then we see what he did to Jim Acosta. The berating of this man at the press conference, telling him to sit down. You are very rude. You are fake news. And this all came about because Acosta was asking the president about the migrant caravan, and he said, "I want to challenge you," but Trump interrupted him and said, "Here we go, come on." And Acosta pressed him about why he called the caravan an invasion. And Trump, 45 said, "I consider it an invasion. You and I disagree on this." And, you know, Acosta kept at him. And Trump said, you know, was letting him be known that he had enough. And here's what got me. At that point, two White House aides tried to physically take the microphone from Acosta, who wrestled for it.
And this is live on air, folks. This is not. They didn't cut away.
No.
They didn't go to commercial. This is on air. This is live television.
This was live. I was in my day job. I do digital managing for a nonprofit, and I was seeing Jim Acosta's name trending. So I went to see what was going on, and I watched. I think it's almost 3 minutes. Footage of this exchange, and I saw him wrestling with the aides, and I was like, see, it made me think about, and I put it on Twitter, Kings of Comedy bit with Cedric the Entertainer, where he said, you know, black people don't hope, we wish. We live by the wish creed, and we wish that a mother would, you know, do such and such to us. And I was watching it, and I said, I wish someone would put their hands on me for a microphone while I'm just doing my job. Because if that had happened to me, and I'm pretty sure I would go, you know, far to say for you too, Neil, that the whole coverage of this nonsense would have went completely different if it was one of us. The fact that somebody got physically handled at a press conference blew my mind. The most unprofessional nonsense I have ever seen. This man, he doesn't get paid enough by CNN to be bothered in this way. I could not believe what I was watching. The back and forth between them. And then the White House aides, I know they're not getting paid enough to be coming in, being Trump's bodyguards or whatever they think that they're doing, to be wrestling over a microphone. The sheer disrespect and the circus act of it all, it just, you know, it's comical. It's so comical that it's sad. But this is what we have to live with. This is our president. This is, you know, the news and the reporters. They don't get paid enough to do any of this, to have to deal with any of this. It was just comical. I was just like, what am I watching? Never in my life have I seen a president act so undignified and his staff to be just as undignified. There are literally no words. What did you think when you saw it, Neil?
So I didn't watch it live. I saw clips like you did. And I was flabbergasted, obviously. And as of this recording, I just got an alert that the White House is announcing the suspension of credentials for Jim Acosta. So this is where we're at right now. So I'm not going to give attention to it anymore because I think we've spoken about it enough. And I think him getting his credentials removed wrongly, first of all, let me just say that plainly. He shouldn't have got his credentials removed.
Not at all.
Jim was in the right in this situation. He was asking a legitimate question, and his credentials were taken away as a result. Not because he asked the question, but because he is being perceived as the aggressor in trying to ask the question, and a White House staffer trying to wrestle the microphone away from him. That is why his credentials were taken away, which is asinine. That's asinine, because he is a journalist. All he's trying to do is ask a question, and literally, he got his credentials taken away. So we're not going to give attention to it anymore. But we are going to give attention to the fact that the Attorney General is no longer the Attorney General. Jeff Sessions announced, as of this recording, that he's resigning. He sent a letter to the 45's desk and said, "I'm resigning," even though for months they had been in a battle of just words. And then I think within hours of Sessions resigning, our Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein has also resigned as well, within hours of each other. And again, this is all while this press conference is going on. This is all of this is going on during this record. Like, this is all happening at the same time. And it's not a matter of this is the world we live in now, because, you know, white supremacy has existed, you know, white supremacy and imperialism has existed and is in the fabric of the United States. So it's not something that just happened when Trump got there.
Right.
But this is something that, like, this is a clown car situation. We are dealing with a three-ring circus and everything is on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a panicking situation, but the fact that there's so much happening so quickly, it's hard to even react to the Attorney General's resigning, because he is the architect of so many just destructive policies that he's leaving a legacy of broken down, marginalized bodies in his wake. And it's hard enough to even react to that, because there's so many other things going on. And it's not necessarily that they're distractions, right? It's just that there's so many things going on. We can't put we can't just pinpoint one thing, because this other thing is going on at the same time, and you can't just focus. You can't react to this one thing, because this other thing is just as bad.
Right.
And it's also happening.
Right. You can't catch your breath. You can't hit pause to be like, okay, what's going on here? What's going on here? Like, you're juggling so many balls, and these balls are all on fire, and try not to burn your fingertips. You know, you know, with Sessions, are we really surprised? No. No, Trump has been done with Sessions way before today. But, you know, as it's been rumored that, you know, he was told to kind of hold on until after the election, and they did not waste any time. Literally the day after. But it makes me wonder, with all these resignations, how, you know, if they were done before the election, how would they have possibly impacted results? Always going to be the question there, you know, in the strategy or lack thereof of this administration when it comes to who's making the rounds. You know, Sessions, he made it almost 2 years, which I guess is, I don't know what to say for him. He's, 71? I guess he can relax now, or whatever he plans to do. Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord splits you.
Well, I will say this about Jeff Sessions and 45. 45, this is the first statue of the Confederacy that 45 was willing to take down. So there's that. just marinate on that for a second. Just marinate on that. Now, obviously, with our unsung heroes of the week, you know, I think we want to highlight, you know, we talked about it earlier, with all the elections going on Super Tuesday, the protection of folks who are voting, who did vote, was protected by folks at the Lawyers Committee and other organizations across the country. The Lawyers Committee is one of the national organizations that has election protection lawyers across the country, but there are a slew of other organizations. But we wanted to highlight the Lawyers Committee for the work that they did specifically in Georgia and Florida as it pertains to extending voting hours in key majority-minority jurisdictions in both of those states to allow for marginalized folks to vote. There were countless issues with voting machines across the country, and without the work that election protection volunteers do, not just on election day, but prior to election day and after election day, the protection of the right to vote would not be salvageable without these folks. So kudos to them for doing the tremendous work that they do, tireless and thankless work.
Exactly. I hope they're able to get a little breather before they start back to working and looking forward to next year and, of course, 2020.
Agreed. And as far as what we're reading, I wanted to highlight a book that was just published recently by someone who I hold in high regard, Jamie Harrison. Published his book, Climbing the Hill and How to Build a Career in Politics and Make a Difference. Highly recommend the book. It's an audio form that you can buy on Audible through our subscription service by going to cspn.supportus or cspn.us.supportus. And it keeps this show free, but it also, we have free Audible subscriptions, so why not use them? So the book is available on Audible. It's also available on Amazon. We have ways on the CSPN website where you can actually support the show and keep our show free and keep our lights on while simultaneously buying Jamie's book.
Two for one, can't beat that.
Exactly. So please give his book a good read. It's a very good read. Highly recommend.
Jamie was over the South Carolina Democratic Party when I was active as secretary for my local party, and I've had the pleasure of seeing him speak during the convention and just hear him talk about how he, you know, got into politics just from some of the speeches he gave. And I'm very excited to learn that he wrote a book and very glad that he has done so.
Yeah, and with that, we wanted to thank you for listening to this episode of the Wheeling and Dealing podcast. Please follow us on social media, send us emails about the show. Keep us keep engaged, and thank you for listening.
Thank you all.
The CSPN Media podcast presentation.